following program may contain coarse language, suggestive dialogue, and discussion of violent imagery and sexual situations. It is intended for mature listeners who can tell the difference between facts and opinions.
Our hearts go out to Chisato on this episode of the Toonami Faithful Podcast. I am your host, Sketch, and with me I have...
Editorial writer, Laser Kid.
And...
your wonderful data monkey, Colt Burr. I'm back, and it has been a month.
Yay!
Oh, yeah. I kind of promised that I'd bring you on for the next Licorice discussion, because you seem to be pretty interested in it.
It's a fun show! Chisato's
it is a fun
so
show.
Bubbly!
Yes, she is!
It is. But before we talk about episodes 7 through 10 of Licorice Recoil, we got episode 7 of Ninja Kamui.
More crazy shit.
True. But a lot of that happens in very rapid succession, because if you thought they were going to spend most of this episode with Higan fighting Lil, it's just a Lil fight. Just a little one.
So it turns out, you know, he talked so much to compensate.
He really does. Well, he tried to go out with a bang, but
didn't work.
And the next time we see him, he is a really messed up corpse delivered to the Council of Evil Ninjas.
Ding dong. Hey, Evil Ninjas, I got a package for you. It's a dead Evil Ninja. All right, I guess I'll have to sign for it.
Excuse me, ma'am, will you sign for this package? If he was alive, he'd be asking if somebody would sign for his package.
Oh my.
Oh my, indeed. There was at least one moment where he's like, yes, this is a real ninja. This is the challenge I wanted.
Yeah, it's what he wanted until it's not what he wanted.
Okay, guy, whatever gets you off.
Yeah, that seems to be his thing.
You just wanted a good blow. All right. I know in the previous conversation, we were like, oh, man, I hope Emma's not dead because she just delivered a lot of important information. And if she dies, that's like kind of cheap.
She
but
is
no,
not dead.
She is not dead. And if you thought she had some startling reveals in the previous episode.
Oh man.
Plot exposition.
There is
good
a lot more to come. Yes. Yes. Well, early on in this... in the discussions we've had for Ninja Kamui, I was like, gee, I hope we get to see more of Mari. And we are.
Yes.
we're getting quite a bit more.
Yes, I will say, I was very happy to find out, oh, this technique originally was Mari's. I was
that
on the
was
right track.
Interesting.
Sort of. Although that makes me wonder some other things.
So you were thinking that Mari had done something to... Higan to
that
make sure
original,
that he would survive.
That was my theory until we learned otherwise, yes. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering if Mari did something else.
Maybe. I mean...
We might have a surviving kid after all.
Maybe.
It's possible, but that'd be a weird setup.
I don't know.
If we want to give Higan a reason to live, what better reason could you have?
Oh, that's a good point. That is a good point, because once he finishes his business and kills Yumaji and presumably anybody else who gets in his way, what's he got to live for anymore? We see that he is totally ill-equipped to take on any other kind of life than being a trained assassin when he first decides to become an exile with Mari because they're with child. Also, I really appreciate that Bobo's is like, yes, and you can even feel him kick. And Higan's like, he kicks? like, no, Higan, not that kind of kick.
Not that kind.
Now, the kid's not going to, like, fly out of the womb doing a ninja kick. It's not going to... But that would be cool.
This is anime, but it's not that much of an anime.
It's not that anime.
Just gives him a broken jaw from the womb. Just one shot to the head.
And he's like, that's my boy.
Oh my gosh.
Son, don't decapitate the doctor on the way out. It's not okay.
It's not okay. This is not Twilight.
It's not going to get us out of the medical bills.
Oh my gosh. The true enemy of Ninja Conway. crippling medical debt.
Well, if they had the kid in Japan, it actually wouldn't have been that bad.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So we find out that Emma / Asuka was a ninja that greatly admired Mari, and she also went through some disfigurement after a mission. Well, actually, not even before. Before she was picked up by the organization, she got disfigured in the facial area to the point that her parents wouldn't even take her back. So the organization takes her, and they're like, no, this is a gift, because now you can become anybody. You're perfect to be a ninja. So she trains to use cosmetics and other things to become a master of disguise. And that's kind of her whole deal. But she also has a secret mission from the previous elder to make sure that the clan continues down the right path. And when Mari decides that she wants to leave because she's with child, their kinship is greatly put to the test, and Asuka attacks her and tries to convince her to do the opposite of let that child alone.
Do not let that child alone.
Get rid of the kid. It's like, are you asking for a ninja abortion right now?
That does seem to be what they were looking for, yes.
Well, maybe she can get that done on that one ninja street in the first episode of TMNT 1987. They got to have a ninja gynecologist or,
you know,
OBGYN.
I could see
the
ninja OBGYN. I could absolutely see that happen there. I mean, we've got ninja,
ninja Planned Parenthood.
Ninja Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Insert your own puns here.
She even makes a point that, like, you could have won this fight if you didn't stop to protect the baby at that particular moment. And then Mari says, no, it's these bonds that make me strong. And now what are you going to do? So she lets her go. And decides to stay within the organization to keep tabs on it on the inside. And then we find out that her latest mission is to work undercover as an FBI agent. Makes a little aside to her current boss, which would be Mike.
Good old Mike.
Make a note of his bad habits.
Yeah, but I do like Mike.
Does he really have that many bad habits? Is it just drinking too much coffee?
I think it's just drinking too much coffee.
There are way worse habits.
There are definitely way worse habits. He does have a penchant for colorful language.
He's really just around to be like, holy shit. What the hell?
He escaped every 70s cop movie ever.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what he's there for.
I mean, it's not fun.
He doesn't even smoke. You're not allowed to smoke in Adult Swim action shows.
He did try to drink, but it ended up being tea.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it or not ended tea, up a being power, an energy drink. Yeah, energy drink. That's right.
It ended up being power thirst.
Power thirst. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Really? Coffee? I mean, I know it's not good for you to drink a lot of coffee, drink a lot of caffeine, but There are far, far worse vices that he could definitely be falling into given his line of work, given everything he's been through.
God. Yeah.
So let the man drink his coffee, okay? All right. My aside over. We do see that there are quite a few ninja that don't want to do things the way Yamaji wants to run the organization. And they kind of scoff at these foreigners getting involved. And they're like, they're just here to get the cool weapons. And like, they're not real ninja. But
not the real ninja. Not like us.
Yeah. Not holding up the real traditions.
I guess I've made this comment on this before, but good Lord, it's the Lin Kuei from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And it's at least heavily implied that Mari's the one that developed the cloaking technology, which is so incredibly advanced. Like, my gosh.
She is definitely a smart one.
Yes. Well,
that and government paychecks giving you access to, kick-ass technology.
Yeah, that helps a lot. It really does.
Yeah, but she develops it so that all the other ninjas that want to defect can hide effectively. Because, they definitely gotta hide from this organization. And we see about how well it goes in the end. It's quite unfortunate. These folks, they just want to get out. They just want to get out. Oh, but we can't allow that.
That would be dangerous to us because you have a certain set of skills.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Oh, yeah. We also confirmed that Higan doesn't have to stay in the suit all the time, which is something I wondered because Emma made a point of saying it's connected to your brain and all of that. I was like, is he just going to be in there all the time? But no, he can take it off.
It's not, drilled in. It's just, that super, weird ass, like microwave technology that, connects to your nerve endings or whatever.
Yeah, fair enough. she's also like, quit ogling me. I'm not interested in married men with kids.
That was,
and I'm like, but Asuka,
he's a free man now.
I couldn't tell if that was a compliment or an insult at that, but it's like, I don't know if I should. I feel like it was more of an insult. Damn woman, you knew better.
It's like, open the wounds, why don't you? Sheesh. Yeah. Another quality episode of Ninja Kamui.
This one's turning out really, really well.
Yep, seven episodes in, and we're not at the point of going, no. Are you doing?
It's a great sign for an original.
Yeah, but Fena also had that, and then it tanked out the last two episodes, so.
Yeah, but we got more episodes left than that.
Even at this point in Fena, like six or seven episodes in, it was starting to.
There are some questionable things at this point with Fena.
It was showing some cracks. And I'm not going to say that this is showing no cracks. But, I mean, everybody has a different feeling on whether or not the robot suits are entirely necessary. But,
well, they're ninja robots, and as we've just said, ninja robots, the power's in you.
But DeMarco did say that they are supposed to be tokusatsu inspired.
Could actually see that.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
Now do a rider kick. you're going to have a rider kick. The rider kick and the Akira slide, they are requirements.
I would also love to see a combination effect.
Yeah.
If we're going tokusatsu on this, let's get us a Megazord.
Well, I mean, the robots aren't really combining robots.
No, I'm being ridiculous.
Maybe they could come up with some way to combine them, which would be cool.
We can always just get a Quadrill. That'll work.
Yeah. Quadrill. You can combine anything with a Quadrill.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good. So, listeners, we hope you've been enjoying Nijikamui, and we will continue to cover it as best we can in the weeks to come. But now, it's time to check in with Liko Riko.
Good old Liko Riko.
And there is a lot to cover in these 7 episodes.
Oh my, yes.
Oh boy. So much to talk about. But before we do that, like, in general, Colt, like, what are your thoughts on the show?
It's good. I mean, I'm actually rather surprised how they managed to take the concept and just keep it, like, lighthearted, despite the political, you know, and state, like, cover-up and violence sort of thing. So, you kind of have that nice balance between, like, the cutesy bubbliness of Chisato versus the whole, like, you know, government conspiracy theory to use, you know, orphaned girls as killing machines to, you know, cover up things that the government doesn't want people to realize. It's a weird, like, well-done balancing act.
Yeah, and it's not easy to balance that.
It is not, like, when we were first watching, I'm like, oh, hey, the organization is going to turn out to be corrupt in 5, 4. I'm still counting. Not surprising.
Now, who is best girl and why is it Mizuki? I mean, I joke, but, like, personality-wise, I adore Chisato, and Takina is really fun.
Takina is probably my favorite, but, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of them.
Yeah.
No.
The characters are so well-balanced, it works out just amazingly well for how they're trying to play the show.
Agreed.
Or maybe best girl was Mika all along.
Ooh.
Nah, he's best dad.
I mean, yes.
Best dad for sure. So, episode 7, Time Will Tell. Kusunoki has Chisato and Takina draw Majima from memory, and it's useless.
I love this. One of them was clearly better than the other, though.
Yes, Chisato's was definitely better. At least had the right color and general face shape. Right. It wasn't quite the same. It was like spiky hair instead of flip. He looked like a Yu-Gi-Oh character.
I mean, it's not perfect, but like I could recognize you put the two together on that one. Yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
You put the two together, be like, yeah, that's that guy.
They're like, well, Fuki, if you think you could do better, why don't you draw him? Well, I haven't seen him. And Sakura's like, boy, they really should make art a requirement for Licorice.
Yeah, that. I mean, you'd sit there and think that because it's like, you know, considering everything that they have to go through, like having some ability to like properly do that or just fuck body cameras.
But yeah, I was going to say, just get some Google Glass contacts or something.
Yeah, why don't they have some kind of cameras on them? They have so much other tech.
I would assume it's probably just a security thing. Because if they die, they get access to the tech and they don't want them to.
Yeah, I suppose that's a...
Yeah, you have to realize that they basically consider all of the Licorice as expendables. If they die, it's a case of, oh, well, okay, we just clean up the bodies and they're orphaned so no one gives a shit.
They are indeed expendables.
Well, at the very least, put on a body cam because that's readily available technology.
Hmm.
And, you know, if that gets lost, well, I mean, you can always just buy another GoPro.
Plus, all the footage can be transferred to something else in the cloud.
Yeah. Like, you could probably set it up so that it's like, you know, you can put a kill switch on access to it. And so, you know, someone can still hack it, but you can pull information off it so that once they do hack it, well, it's useless.
Right. So at the cafe, Chisato notices a text on Teach's phone that says something about her future. And the girls figure out he's meeting someone at an exclusive place called Bar Forbidden. Kurumi and Takina wonder if Kusunoki and Mika are lovers, and Chisato and Mizuki very quickly shoot her down. Yeah. Like,
none of that shit.
Nuh-uh. Majima realizes that Chisato was the little girl who took down his whole crew during the old Radio Tower incident and becomes all the more infatuated with her. So using Robota's help, Majima rolls up on the police station with these guys and cause a scene and inserted so that they can insert a drive that will allow Robota to hack into DA. And this gets covered up as a Yakuza group attack. Also, officer, are you really that stupid?
Apparently, yes.
Yes, the answer is yes in any situation like that.
Now, boys, you shouldn't be coming to the police office with those toys. Oh, officer, I'm sorry about the toys. Ooh.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, toys. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, in this state...
Yeah!
You wouldn't really expect a real gun. But, come on, you're a police officer. They're coming to the police department. You really think they're rolling up with fake toy guns?
Apparently that is exactly what they thought.
They probably didn't have enough people on staff to deal with that kind of situation to begin with, but...
Well, yeah.
Ooh, jeez. Fuki and Sakura visit Liko Riko to show footage from the police station incident so that they can identify Majima. And Sakura tries to get matcha dango, but Fuki makes them leave before she can eat it. Poor Sakura. I'm starting to feel bad for Sakura. And Sakura points out that Fuki always tries to act so tough in front of Mr. Mika. And Fuki kicks her for it.
Oh, gosh.
She's like trying to hide her face behind the computer. She's also like, hey, I don't recognize you. Who are you? And Kurumi's like, I'm from DA.
Normally, I'm the cute small one.
Nothing to see here.
Link over here.
No, pay no attention to the small girl. So it's time for the night of the meetup, and Mika steps out for an errand, finger quotes. And the girls almost get caught prepping to tail him. I love that.
Yeah.
They're all in these weird positions. It's like, oh, what's going on, guys? Oh, we can't find the udon. Where's the udon? Could it be over here? Over here?
Perhaps.
The udon is in the pantry.
Oh.
Okay, take care. It's like, okay, Mika, how can you not tell that something's up?
Too kind.
Maybe. And in the car on the way to the bar, the girls have a conversation about the Allen pendant that Chisato possesses. A very pinnacle plot point.
Indeed.
And Chisato and Takina go into the bar dressed to the nines using fake names Noriko Wasabi and Taro Kabayashi, which Kurumi decided on.
Of course.
And Mizuki's like, what are you thinking? That's a dead giveaway. Kurumi says, no. When people rely on computers, they can forget to think for themselves, and suggest that's why Mizuki's brain is so melted.
You know, she has a point.
These two are quite the comedic duo. Mika shows up at the bar dressed in a very snazzy white suit looking like some 80s playboy. And soon after, Mr. Yoshimatsu arrives. And that's when Mizuki and Chisato know this is actually a date.
I guess it was. I didn't think of it as such, but I guess it was.
There was some business and some pleasure. And Chisato takes a moment to say, hey, Takina, love comes in all sorts of shapes and forms. Hinting at something there, Chisato? Also, when they're like, well, if Kusunoki shows up, it could still be a date. And they say, no, she's like us. And I compared that to the Japanese version in which they flat out say she's a woman. But saying she's like us, that could imply more.
Yes.
Like maybe Kusunoki isn't into dudes. Come on.
Could be.
Could be. So Chisato and Taki to try to sneak away, but Chisato stops when she overhears what they're talking about, causing Taki to face plant into Chisato's booty.
The sheer amount of crap they pull off in this episode.
There.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, no, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
I love the outfit that Chisato shows up with that big hat. How is, like, the earpiece with the microphone certainly isn't, I mean, I can't believe that the guy at the door didn't have any kind of issue with that.
Peaker Club. Ask no questions.
It's very exclusive. This place is so exclusive, you have, like, a secret panel to get in. And yeah. Then you got to talk to the guy at the front. It's like, if you have the secret code, I mean, I suppose they have to double verify. Everybody's all about double verifying. But, like, if you have the secret code, come on. So now Chisato decides to approach Yoshimatsu to thank him for her heart surgery. And he says he can't admit to doing it and hopes that she can understand. But Chisato says she does understand, but she wants to help people like he did. Which means Yoshimatsu walks off saying that Alan children have a purpose and that he'll let Mika explain. Meanwhile, Mizuki and Kurumi are trying to get into the bar. And Kurumi's like, are you really judging me by my looks? I'm 30 years old. Can't you read my ID? And Mizuki is like, I know I look like a teenager, but I'm really 20. Girl.
Again, Kurumi does the best things. I'll just hack into it and not care about the potential, you know, thought process behind it. Okay, we're going to get a, you know, have a really nice dinner tonight. Okay, cool.
Anything for the mission. But don't worry, these privileges can be quickly retracted without notice. Mika follows Yoshimatsu into the elevator and begs him to give Chisato more time. Yoshimatsu tells him that a talent is something only God possesses and reminds Mika of their promise to deliver Chisato's extraordinary talent for killing to the world. Mika pulls a gun on him, but he can't bring himself to pull the trigger. This is the moment where you realize that the Yuri bait was actually Yaoi bait all along.
Yeah, apparently.
I see it as like a really, like a deep bromance. I still don't, I can buy it. I don't think it's like actually like they love each other, but given the way the backstory is, like, it's like, yeah, I can see it either way.
I don't know if they're in love with each other, but I definitely get they're in lust with each other.
Yeah, they're bed friends.
Yeah,
to be sure.
That's definitely the vibe. Yeah. I get.
Like
they shared a hotel room and they were both in bathrobes. Okay, you don't have to say more. Another dude doesn't get up in another dude's face quite like that if he's not feeling something.
Well, that and DC Douglas makes it all the more one-sided.
Don't you just love that it's Yoshi?
Yes!
It's Kira.
It's fucking Kira. It's Wesker. It's DC Douglas. That man has such a suave voice. It's just like, you know what? I could buy that man being homosexual. How? It's just the fucking voice.
I could buy that he would, you know, seduce anyone, really.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that. I could absolutely see that.
This is, quote-unquote, better representation than Lil in Ninja Kamui. It's still kind of twisted.
It's twisted, but it's twisted in a way that is a lot more believable.
Oh, well, for sure. So, on the other hand, that is to say, hey, gay guys can be bad guys, but not be super creepy about it, too.
That's true. Well, gay guys can be bad guys or good guys, because, I mean, we got one and one here.
Good writing.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
And gay guys can start off as bad guys and turn into good guys too.
Well, classic redemption story.
Indeed. Well, that makes him such a great character, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Outside the building, Takina apologizes to Yoshimatsu, and he tells her that he expects that she can understand that Chisato doesn't belong here.
I still don't get what he's trying to... How is she supposed to get that compared to anybody else?
I think he has the impression, and perhaps understandably so, that Takina understands that the mission is the most important thing.
Okay, I'm a dumbass. I didn't get that. I'm like, what are you? You know she's not with the DA anymore, and she's... I'm so confused.
No, he actually probably wants Chisato to go back to DA full-time and to...
Oh, well, yeah, Chisato, yeah. Yes, but I meant, like, talking to, like...
Yeah.
He's gotta know. This guy knows.
Yeah. No. He thinks that Takina could reason with Chisato and help her understand what her purpose in life is, which Takina's not going to do that.
No.
Especially now. No, if they had this conversation maybe
at the
several episodes ago, maybe.
Maybe, but even
but
then.
But even then, I don't think so.
I think she'd be like, okay, whatever. Yeah, the most she'd be like, will you get me back in? That's about as much as it would go. Like, well, maybe it gets me back in.
Mm.
And that would be, like, at the beginning of her character arc.
Yeah. She's come a long way.
Oh, yeah.
And will continue to come a long way. Mika returns to the bar to tell Chisato that he had promised to keep it a secret in order to get her the surgery. And they have a little moment. She says it's okay. And the next day, things are back to the usual chaos at the cafe. A glowing Mizuki dresses up to head out, but Kurumi tells her that her ID for the bar has already been deleted. Deflated, but still determined, she heads out anyway. And I love how the music slumps when she finds out the ID has been deleted.
Yeah.
It's a good touch. It's a good touch. Like, whose dog is this? Is a stray? I need a man! Girl!
She has her priorities, and she's willing to use any means necessary. It just sucks that the only means necessary was ultimately deleted.
Yeah.
Chisato's running late, so Takina is a bit worried, but Chisato comes in beaming and is asked to look over the manga writer's latest chapter and says that, oh no, you shouldn't kill the bad guys, which is a stark contrast to Takina's earlier opinion that the bad guys in the manga should be killed off. I just find that to be a nice comparison to their mindsets. And Mika smiles, seeing that Chisato is her usual cheerful self. Oh, but there's post credits! And Chisato checks herself in the mirror, and we see that she's put the Allen pendant in the locker. Elsewhere, Majima dangles his own Allen pendant and wonders what kind of mission Chisato has. Robota tells him that it was pointless to be so flashy at the police station, and Majima implies he's going to do something much flashier at the new radio tower.
Stop trying to be buggy!
Wow, okay. True, but didn't expect that one.
Well, he's no Tengen Uzui.
That's true. That's also true.
Yeah.
And now it's time for No Money, Mo Problems. In episode 8, another day, another dollar. Yoshimatsu eats a delicious meal prepared by his secretary, Himegawa. He says that she has quite the talent as a chef, and she asks if she had chosen that career, if the Institute would have supported her. And he replies, the Institute only supports gifts given by God. It's not something you choose. She responds that there's no need to search for the meaning of life if you've been told what it is. And he replies, it's a fortunate thing. Dude.
Yeah. I think we found a corrupt organization right here, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
He is a true believer in his cause.
Yeah, that's something.
Very, very strong convictions. And we see Himagawa packs up a suitcase for her next mission, and Yoshimatsu asks her to handle Chisato with care. At the cafe, Takino realizes the state of the cafe's finances are so bad, and she decides she must take it upon herself to balance the books. These books will be balanced, no matter what. Throughout the episode, she prevents Chisato from recklessly using the expensive non-lethal bullets and causing damage to areas that require a cleaner. And she goes as far as wrapping Chisato up in some of the wire to keep her from shooting.
Every bullet costs money. We count our magazines.
Yeah.
She's budgeting to its most extreme.
About to run out of there. And she's like, nope, no bullets. We're cutting back. When disarming a bomb for a client... the client tries to rip them off and then tries to pull a gun on Chisato. That goes about as well as you'd expect. And Takina tells him that they won't be paying for the damage that was caused by the other guys and threatens to leave the bomb partially armed if they don't pay up. That's extortion. But
yeah, well, I was not exactly given much choice here.
No.
It was a funny moment, though. I was like, I'm not paying you. All right, fine. Blow up.
It's a Ghostbusters moment. Okay, we can just let it right back out. Not a problem.
Exactly. Oh, you don't think that you need us? Okay. Deal with it yourself. And Takina also develops a new menu item that's cheaper to make than Chisato's popular parfait. It's some kind of cake with a swirly blob of tasty hot chocolate that looks like a pile of creamy goodness.
Yes.
That was such a funny moment. All right, you really want this? Is what? Okay.
It's a poo-poo platter.
It's something, all right.
It becomes very popular on social media, and the cafe patronship skyrockets. But Takina doesn't realize what she has unleashed.
Good. Let people consume it and then realize your folly.
Hey, look, it's just, she just wanted to make a cake honoring Soften, okay?
Yeah, totally. You know... it was apparently Toriyama that popularized this kind of poop shape.
That sounds about right.
Thank you, Toriyama-sensei.
Thank you, Toriyama-sensei. Even now.
Also, he might have been the first person to put eyeballs on poop, which means he created the poop emoji.
Oh my god. His influence knows no bounds.
The Dragon Quest slime and the poop emoji.
And now the more you know.
the more you know, or like the shit you know.
Ooh. You might say it's a shitty legacy.
No.
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 It's a great one.
It is a great one. I agree.
But I appreciate the wordplay. Chisato keeps ducking her physical at the nurse's office. And at the nurse's office, Himagawa, what's she doing there, is told that Chisato won't be coming in today. And Dr. Yamagishi knows that she's such an odd new girl. At the language school, Chisato keeps misleading the class by making references to the doge and adding a new chapter to the Holy Bible. My word!
That entire series of events was so silly.
Yeah.
That it was. Hideo Kojima approved. I mean, I don't know, but he said it's like his favorite show of the past year.
Can't blame him.
I could see it.
I hope it inspires a future game.
I would love to see a Kojima game for Licorico, period.
Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be so good? Let the man do it.
Let him cook!
Let him cook!
I can let him cook, but if we're going off of what he typically does, no, because he tends to make more cinematic stuff. But yeah, whatever.
You don't think Licorico suits cinematic?
No, not. I guess it would depend on how he do the combat system.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, most of the Metal Gears have good combat, but you also got to worry about the stealth and stuff. But then, yeah, yes, there's also long cutscenes, but I think that fits this world.
I could see... I'm not going to get off topic.
I mean, like he makes only one kind of game.
That's
but... It's mostly that he makes, like... They're almost more movie than game, would be the way I would see it.
It's the Licorico Walking Simulator!
I mean, I've played Metal Gear Solid 3, at the very least, and it's like, yeah... He would definitely have to do a lot with the gameplay to make a Licorico like that. I'd rather see Platinum do a Licorico.
Well, that sounds good on paper, but only if they put the good team on it, because...
Yeah, I mean, I love Platinum.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm talking like Bayo level.
Yeah,
stuff.
No, I mean, the reason I would say I'd like a Kojima is because, A, the plot dump would fit this, and also, it's not just pure action. You sneak around.
I guess, true. Yeah.
True.
Like, I'd like it to be more like the original Metal Gear Solid, honestly. But that's me.
Well, back to the episode. Yes. At the preschool, Takino gives treats to the kids in a cat witch outfit, while Chisato goes around town in a pumpkin bat dress and almost gives the kids all the money she collected for the various jobs to Takino's chagrin.
Yeah, let the kids have the money.
Those Halloween fits were so good!
Yes, they were.
Super cute.
Honestly, all the costumes they put him in have been great.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I didn't even notice Takina was a cat witch at first, and then I saw the ears and tail. I was like, oh, that's even better. Very, very cute. And with the massively improved finances, they are able to buy a dishwasher and a helper robot and invest a bit in the stock market. Sure. And now, to her horror, Takina finally notices what people are saying on social media about the poo-poo platter. It looks like she's holding poop with a smile, but it tastes totally amazing!
And now she is mortified.
A dejected Takina tells Mizuki that they cannot serve that parfait anymore. And Mizuki says, no, people love a gimmick. And tells the robot to take care of a parfait. And the robot says, yes, I will flush this for you. Did you notice that almost every time that the parfait is discussed, a toilet is flushed before or after?
I did not, but that is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
When Takina first shows it off, it was right after Chisato gets out of the bathroom. And several other times whenever they're talking about it.
That's amazing.
It's the subtle things you miss.
Yeah, absolutely.
Compared to the second time around.
That's why you gotta watch this show more than once.
I probably will, actually. I've been having a lot of fun with this one, honestly.
Yes. Some day forward, Takina calls Chisato to ask why she hasn't shown up for her physical yet, because previously they talked about how it's talking his job to make sure that the staff all take care of their health. And Chisato's like, the staff? It's like, you're not going to call me bestie? She didn't say it out loud, but I'm sure she was thinking it. Well, Chisato has a very good reason for being late to her physical. You see, Majima has shown up at her safe house and is now holding her at gunpoint.
That's, you know, I don't know, though. I don't know if we'll take that work excuse. I don't know.
Not in this line of work.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, you could just shot him and moved on. It would have been fine. You didn't need to hang out there. I think you're still going to get demerit for that one.
Yeah, they have a surprisingly chill conversation.
Yes, I was legitimately shocked. I was expecting that to be a lot more. That's sort of like, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Okay.
I actually wasn't that surprised by it, because Majima was less about killing her and more about, at least at that point, it was less about killing her and more about trying to figure out what she was about.
Yeah,
so
I
that conversation kind of made sense, as the idea was he was invested in her because of who she was in DA, and then she was mostly just kind of caught in the crossfire at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it even starts with him being like, go ahead, answer the phone. You gonna get that? Come on. And they talk about the importance of her health, her abilities, her special heart, the radio tower incident, how they're both Allen children, and their mutual appreciation for Die Hard. Chisato's favorite character is Powell.
Again, I mean, such a weird, weird tangent that somehow works.
And base take, in my opinion.
They get a flashback to the radio tower, and Majima has a blindfold, but he's able to pinpoint all the enemies. So I think we know what his special ability is. He's Daredevil.
Ah, let's see.
He hears good. Chisato doesn't understand why the Allen Institute would support a guy like Majima, and Majima rebukes the idea that the Institute is trying to achieve world peace, and that they're not afraid to acknowledge the killer instincts of people like him and Chisato. He gets up to leave because he can hear Takina approaching. Takina is caught off guard by his presence, and he manages to slip away. Doesn't quite make sense, because in all their prior interactions, he didn't seem that physically capable. But, I guess he got over being wrapped up.
I think in that situation with Takumi, it was point blank, and unlike Chisato, she couldn't react as fast.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. He did shoot at Chisato one time, and she coolly dodges it, and he's like, man, that never gets old. I get the feeling that these two... Well, Chisato doesn't like this guy, but it's like she understands something about him.
Mutual respect.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Maybe. And now mutual appreciation of film.
Indeed. I mean, as long as they're not going to try and tell me that it's a Christmas movie, we're all good here.
I would love to have that debate. For them to have that debate,
that would have been great. I would have loved
that would have been a dub ad lib that I would have been way okay with.
Likewise, as long as we don't lose anything of substance, I'm all for that.
Oh, and there was so much substance in this conversation.
Oh yes,
very, very much so. Also, he apparently doesn't like bitter drinks.
No coffee for what? You.
Who are you, Naota from Holy Kumi? yeah. Back at the cafe, Chisato tells the others that she can't believe the Institute would support Majima, but Mika avoids the question. Takina tells Chisato if she doesn't pick up a call within three rings in the future, then she will conclude that she is in danger and proceed to Chisato's location immediately. Call me, beat me if you want to reach me. And later that night, Chisato and Takina share a nice little moment out on the bench. Chisato tells Takina that the gun she carries was a gift from Yoshimatsu and it's precious to her. And then laments that Mr. Yoshi hasn't been by in a long time. I feel like at this moment, Takina's kind of sensing that she can improve the mood. So she takes out one of the little gifts that she was giving the kids at the school and gives it to Chisato because she really wanted one. And it's a little doggo that she can attach to her bag. It's so cute. And then Chisato says, Takina, you've been a very busy bee lately. And Takina responds that she wants to save the cafe because it's important to Chisato. Oh, I love it.
It's beautiful.
And then Chisato admits to Takina that the reason that she doesn't like going to her physical is mainly a fear of needles. And Takina is amused and says that that's so cute. But Chisato says she can dodge bullets, but she can't dodge needles.
I absolutely agree with her. I fucking hate needles.
I've never been a fan of needles.
I got used to them as a kid due to reasons. So I understand, but like for me, I'm so well past. I'm just like, okay, it's a needle. Cool.
Yeah, I used to dread getting shots and blood draws, but I'm pretty okay having them now.
I tolerate it. It's the feeling of knowing the needle's in your body, and my brain goes, nope.
Yeah, get it done. I can see
stop.
That.
Stop.
Yeah, as now that you mention it, Chisato describes it as she hates the feeling of something foreign being inserted into her body.
I can understand yes. that.
Yes.
Phrasing.
Mm.
But what if it's talking his fingers? I'm sorry.
God damn you.
Well, so would the needle be okay if it was made in Japan?
I think these needles are made in Japan.
Yeah. I just had to go there. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So she does go to her physical and she can't wait for the poking to be over. And Himagawa goes mask off and admits she didn't give Chisato the usual shot. And that's when Chisato starts feeling the effects and passes out. Himagawa sets Chisato up on an operating table and pulls out a device with needles attached to wires. It had to be needles!
Mm-hmm.
After the third ring goes unanswered, Takina rushes out while Himagawa runs high voltage into Chisato's heart. And elsewhere, Yoshimatsu says, "This is all your fault, Mika." Sure it is, buddy. Sure it is. All his fault.
Absolutely. Totally how that works.
At the end of this episode, I was freaking out, man. I was like, what's going to happen? Are they going to break her heart? Are they going to, like, hack her heart so that she has to do what they tell her to? Is she going to be controlled by it? What's going to happen?
I assumed at the worst she was going to be able to react faster because I just assumed she would have been lethargic. Because it was like, I mean, depending on what the reaction to the electricity was, anything could have happened.
Mm. Well, in episode 9, what's done is done. Himagawa is about to leave just as Takina rushes in, and Takina is unable to capture her when she flees. Takina, doggone it, 2 times in a row. You're hurting your rep, girl. Later, Dr. Yamagishi explains that Himagawa has irreparably damaged Chisato's one-of-a-kind artificial heart. She did so by overcharging the battery with high voltage and made it impossible to access the hardware anymore. But worst of all, it can no longer be recharged. Which means Chisato only has 2 months left to live at best, and less if she exerts herself.
Yeah,
Takina, that's
not good.
Takina and the audience is shocked to hear this, and that there's nothing that can be done. And she says that she'll go kill the woman, but Chisato tells her that killing the woman won't change anything. But I, like Takina, still want that bitch to pay.
I mean, yeah.
That bitch gotta pay.
You got to pay what you owe.
Dare she do that? Mizuki gives Chisato a ride down to DA, and she opened Chisato opens fire on some guys on the road. Now, the first time I watched that scene, and I wasn't quite paying attention, I thought maybe these guys were like trying to get the girls' attention because they're like, ooh, pretty girls on the road, but no, they were actually like road raging, trying to get them to speed up and being annoyed that they didn't speed up, so they're like on the side of them and like, hey, what are you doing? And that's the point when Chisato was like, okay, I'm shooting you now. Don't waste those bullets.
Justifiable.
Justifiable road rage.
Indeed.
Because if they were like, you know, like hooting and hollering because there's girls on the road, I was like, dang, Chisato, that's like the opposite of being a good wingman. Ah, Mizuki doesn't want those guys. I hope. Ugh. Ugh. Right, so Chisato at DA is talking to Kusunoki, gives Chisato back a camera, and tells her that they're planning a large-scale operation to take down Majima, and want her to help with the little time she has left as a way to pay back DA for turning her into an excellent licorice. And she says, you know, you should bring Takina back, and maybe I'll think about it. So, Fuki and Sakura roll up on the cafe again, and Sakura once again is denied dessert. And they leave with a summons to leave Takina with a summons to return to DA. But now Takina is not really sure if she wants that.
Too much
again, character growth.
I love that.
And she's kind of distracted by this. So on their next mission, she's thinking about her choice and getting distracted. So she's not really doing a good job in the situation. And Chisato won't stop overexerting herself, which is not good. Man. Back at the cafe, Mika lights up a smoke and says that he smokes when he's feeling guilty because it hurts him just enough.
Ow.
Hmm. I mean, you shouldn't smoke anyway, but I understand his reasoning, I guess. Chisato looks at some images captured on the camera and confirms that it was Yoshimatsu who saved her life. And it's flashback time, which is a story that is being told to Kurumi by Mika. We see that Chisato was an incredible licorice and already wearing a first uniform at 7 years old. She could dodge bullets and shoot with precision even before the surgery. So the heart isn't the reason why she could do those things. However, Yoshimatsu's astonished with this ability, but Mika explains that Chisato has a congenital heart disease that's going to kill her within 6 months. And we see Chisato collapse after taking down all the girls in the mock trial. And we actually see Fuki rush to her aid. So those two used to be friends. Maybe Fuki still cares about her. I do think Fuki does still care about her. She's just also really annoyed at her for reasons.
She's too good.
Teenage girls.
Well, she's also really jealous that Mika went and took Chisato away, and obviously she really highly regards Mika. So we see the artificial heart that is several generations beyond what is currently known in the medical field, but Yoshimatsu admits that it has a durability issue and won't actually last Chisato into adulthood, and Mika says, that's okay. Licorice are decommissioned after the age of 18, so if it lasts until then, it's enough. And Yoshimatsu replies, It's enough kills, you mean, stating that even a talent for killing must be delivered to the world. That's some sick line of thinking, bro.
Yeah, just a wee little bit.
Like, if the Allen Institute isn't trying to make the world a better place, what is their deal? Who knows? Who knows?
The world may never know.
They seem like religious maniacs.
Yeah, that is the... I'm definitely getting cultist vibes here.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously a cult. Not to be confused with cult in this call. But he is a cult of personality. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah.
I think you broke cult.
Just wasn't sure how to respond to that one. It's like, sure, I guess. Most people just say I'm a robot, but okay.
You're not Robota.
The puns, they are live.
I mean, nobody wants to be a robot, so that guy's a punk.
God.
Yes.
Would someone please put him out of our misery already?
Probably not for a few more episodes, hopefully.
Probably not.
And but this it'd be nice. Is yeah. This is when we see Yoshimatsu and Mika alone in their hotel room, both in bathrobes, and this is where Yoshimatsu brings up the concept of like, hey, how are you with handling kids? And Mika's like, I'm bad at that. But it's your job. It's like, yeah, but I wouldn't even be doing that if not for this leg. Uh-huh. Well, I want you to make sure to raise this girl. And he's like, yeah, DA will take care of it. He says, no, I want you to do it. Personally.
You specifically. So,
and this is where he makes him promise to raise Chisato because she's already their daughter.
Aww.
That'd be really sweet if it wasn't also really twisted. Really twisted.
Slowly they both become assholes in their own ways.
Hmm. Well, Mika starts as an asshole and gradually improves. We see little Chisato rolling around in a motorized wheelchair, just having a grand old time at the hospital. And she bumps into Yoshimatsu and she says, hey, it's you. You're the one who's going to help me. And at first he tries to deflect. But when she asks what she can do to repay him, he gets kind of serious and says she has to fulfill her mission. And in order for her to do that, he had become a savior for the time being.
Which is such a vague sentence. I don't know what the hell I was expecting there.
Savior. So we're now dealing with Negan.
Well, Chisato gives him a big hug and says that someday she'll be a savior too. And it's probably at this point that Yoshimatsu probably should have put two and two together that maybe it's not gonna save them. It's like, if you want this girl to be a train killer, maybe she should just come right out and say it. But he sets her down, starts walking away, but Chisato calls to him and takes a picture with the camera before he leaves. Which, as we know, gets confiscated by DA. So that's why she can't figure out that it's him for a very long time. And after the operation, Chisato is given the Allen pendant and the gun.
The 5th birthday. Here's a pistol. 7th, whatever.
It's her rebirth day.
Happy rebirth day, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
My job just plashed into my head, and I somewhat dislike you both. I can't say anything about it either, which sucks even more.
I see. Those NDAs. Anyway. Takina interrupts the conversation about now between Mika and Kurumi, and Mika says, hey, have you been eavesdropping this entire time? And Takina says, yes, with Mizuki. And we pan over, you see Mizuki, she's like, what the hell, Takina? Come on, Takina, don't be a rat. She doesn't even think about that kind of thing. You know, it's just so matter of fact. Kurumi suggests that getting into a DA mission would help them figure out a way to save Chisato, and Takina admits that she was going to decline, but she will return to DA to help Chisato. Elsewhere, Majima confronts Robota at his residence about Yoshimatsu and tells the hacker that he has a plan. Sometime after, Takina takes Chisato on a perfectly scheduled date that is forced to detour a bit when the aquarium is closed. And also, it doesn't quite end like Takina wanted because the forecast predicted snow, and there's no snow.
Yes.
And Chisato says, God's too whimsical to plan around. And then Chisato...
hang out for like 5 more minutes, come on.
Yeah. You don't like the weather? Wait 5 minutes. Chisato baits Takina into admitting that she's going back to DA and congratulates her, but Takina isn't so sure she wants that anymore. Oh, also, Takina was getting a bit cold, even though she had this great winter fit that they got at the beginning of the day, because Chisato was like, is that the only outfit you have? He's like, yes, it's the one you picked out for me. Girl, we going shopping. It's time for Takina's Fit Winter Edition. And it's very cute. Very cute. But it could use a scarf. So it gets a scarf when she gets cold, and Chisato gives her a scarf. And when they part ways, she's like, what about your scarf? No, it's a gift. It's my parting gift. Oh. So they part ways after a fist bump. Seriously, a fist bump, not even a hug. I'm not asking for a kiss. Give me a hug. And then the snow starts coming down. Oh, that's so nice. They have their, I just got to compare it to Your Name moment, where they're at the opposite end of the stairs. And after the credits, Yoshimatsu and Himagawa are stopped when exiting a tunnel on the road by Majima and his guys. And Yoshimatsu sets down a case and then puts his hands up. And you know what? I kind of hope that Majima does something bad to them.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah, I admit I had some more thoughts.
Like episode 10's title, Repay Evil with Evil. So obviously things are pretty awkward around the cafe, what with Chisato not having much time to live. There is a decision to be made, and when Chisato catches Mizuki and Kurumi searching for leads regarding Chisato's heart, she declares that the cafe will be shutting down and admits that it's actually stayed open longer than anticipated.
That just makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. It also makes all the patrons sad, as we'll see later in the episode. Majima confronts Yoshimatsu... Majima confronts Yoshimatsu about meddling with Chisato and questions if he would have Majima killed too, which Yoshimatsu replies that Majima has been excellent so far and asks if 1,000 guns was enough. Majima didn't like that. He didn't like that at all. Tells him not to patronize him and then threatens to put a bullet in his head. And Yoshimatsu says that if shooting him will fulfill the Allen's ideals, then he's more than willing to sacrifice his life. This guy.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the cause, even though it's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a very disgusted Majima says that Allen is just like DA, and once DA is dealt with, he's going after the Institute. With the cafe closing down, Kurumi and Mizuki plan to go overseas. Mizuki apparently found a hunk of a guy in Vancouver. Okay, Washington or British Columbia. Either way, I'm just a state away, Mizuki! come to Papa. I'm as desperate as she is. Takina talks to Majima's client in his cell, and by talks, I mean threatens. To be fair, he tries to attack her first, but then she pins him down and holds a gun to his head until she gets more information out of him. He's like, we can't even do anything with 1,000 guns. What are you talking about? I don't know any Oshimatsu. Leave me alone. Hey, you just dislocated my shoulder. I'm going to kill you. Yeah, good luck with that. Back at the cafe, Chisato pages through a photo album and tells Mika that he could hire some part-timers to keep the cafe open if he wanted. And he says, is that what she would want? She can't really hide her sadness at this point. And Teach offers to make her a cup of coffee. A school bus worth of licorice show up at Majima's previous location, but he's already gone, and he's set up a video screen to talk to them. He jokes that it is this some kind of field trip? Oh, and you brought a chaperone, too. Before asking Kusunoki what kind of villains would be pretending to be heroes of justice, and if DA even exists under the law, but Kusunoki replies that they existed long before those laws were even put into place.
I am the law!
Interesting. He balks at their Machiavellianism and says that people will forget the importance of peace if it's given out rather than earned. And Kusunoki says that's the most intelligent thing she's heard from him. But he lacks the self-awareness to realize that his actions are evil. He declares that DA shouldn't be controlling the scales and it's up to him to restore the balance. So he's going to attack the new radio tower because it's not balanced unless both towers are broken. This guy.
Well, at least he has his symmetry.
Yeah.
I lost my thought there.
It's not symmetrical. We got to break the other one. Yeah, but are you going to break it in exactly the same way? I mean, I know you were there for the first one, but are you going to do it?
I mean, set the detonations right, probably.
I suppose. Majima's about to end the broadcast when Takina steps out of line to demand that Majima tells her where Yoshimatsu is, but he tells her instead to enjoy the coffee he left out for them because it should still be hot. Given he hates bitter drinks, that's kind of amusing to me. Did he leave out the good stuff, though?
Probably not.
So this is probably the point where Kusunoki's like, I can't believe I let this girl back in. Insubordination already, Takina?
Not like it mattered at that point.
Nah, probably not. I don't think she'll get a demerit for that one. Though maybe if they find out about what she did to the guy in the jail cell. She even flat out says, hey, I was fired from my job previously because I killed too many people. I wouldn't really mind if I got fired again, for the record. Woo! I like this side of Takina.
Yeah.
Whew. Now several patrons come by and are very upset that Lico Rico is closing down. The manga artist says she can't find another cafe. It's quiet. Lico Rico?
Quiet?
It depends on when she shows up. She gets her before everyone else does.
Before the place opens, maybe.
I just find out. Why not just do it at home? Oh, maybe she has kids.
That, that I can see that.
She gets cheap drinks from Chisato.
Well, the only drinks around are from Mizuki's stash. They were like, when they brought out Chisato's original parfait, which is very expensive to make, and the manga artist is like, oh, this looks like something it would serve at a bar. And the police officer's like, yeah, we should have drinks. And Gitanto says, yeah, we got drinks around because of Mizuki. And then the cop's partner's like, Mr. Abe, you're on shift. You can't drink. Don't be such a buzzkill, dude. Literally killing the buzz. So yeah, I don't think they typically serve booze. But maybe they can make an exception. They certainly have booze, but it's almost entirely Mizuki's. And I don't think she wants to share.
No, probably not.
I mean, especially back then, that was before they had enough money, so you can't go be using the booze when they're a precious commodity. Anyway, at the grand opening of the new radio tower, Enkuboku, the Licorice are already on location preparing to stop Majima. Back at the very somber cafe, Jisato retrieves a dusty box from storage and Mika tells her it's a gift, not a weapon. And it's a yukata intended for her to wear at her coming of age ceremony. You said it was not a weapon, but it is a weapon of mass destruction to my heart.
I just found it cute.
Mm. Oh, it's very cute.
It is very cute.
Chisato's twirling around. It's precious. But, you know, coming to the realization that she's not going to make it to her coming of age ceremony. Hey, two references to coming of age ceremonies in the same calendar year on Toonami. How about that?
Indeed.
The first one was in Fooly Cooly Shoegaze. Chisato is very happy and expresses her gratitude, but Mika stops her and tells her that he hasn't done nearly enough for her and laments that he had originally had Yoshimatsu save her life so that Mika could profit as a commander, and he promised Yoshimatsu that he would raise Chisato to be the strongest hitman she could be.
And they're both assholes!
Yay!
Yeah. This
doesn't matter how nice
course,
he is, it's still an asshole.
Yeah. Very shocking to Chisato. She can't believe it's the truth. And if it is the truth, why didn't he tell her sooner? And Mika says her admiration for Yoshimatsu had grown so much that it had become her reason for living, so it was just too hard to tell her. He pleads, asking if it had been better if he had told her and that the way that she lived was a mistake. And that if she went back to killing, Yoshimatsu would be her savior again. And man, Bob Carter, the dub voice of Mika in this scene. So good.
He nailed it.
So good. And Lizzie Freeman, in response, wow. Just
good
amazing.
ADR.
Just amazing. If you're not feeling those feels, man. Oh! So she thanks Mika for giving her the choice to decide for herself and says that if she was told the truth, she probably would have resigned herself to being a Licorice and blame all the hardships on him and Yoshimatsu, and she'd never want that to happen. She's glad that she could choose her own path and start the cafe. And no matter what Mika says, she's grateful to both of them because they're her dads. Hmm. Then Chisato asks Mika what he thinks of seeing her in the yukata. And he says he's so proud of his daughter. And Chisato makes the biggest grin.
Oh, that melted my heart right there. Oh, my God.
Beautiful. And we gotta ruin this moment by going back to the ceremony where Robita has hacked the video feed to allow Majima to talk to the populace, attempting to reveal the truth to them about the false peace of Japan. Go ahead.
It's almost like having a clandestine organization that is secret from the world is a bad idea.
Almost. So Majima, his purpose for those 1,000 guns was to scatter them around the prefecture and let people pick them up and do with them as they pleased. So in other words, he turned Japan into a Fortnite map.
It's either that or we're now dealing with the Purge.
I think Josh Knighton said, oh, so it's Texas now.
That's about the most accurate statement.
Like I had to think.
Oh God!
This is just a Fortnite map now. You just there's guns everywhere.
Person picks up gun, immediately gets shot. Well, what'd you think was gonna happen?
Yeah, Kusunoki forbids all the licorice from engaging with civilians. A very good call, because Majima's objective is to bring the licorice out into the open. We see a man on a park bench. He finds a paper bag with a gun in it. And a police officer tells him to drop it, but the man stumbles. A shot is fired, and we see a puddle of blood.
Well,
so this is going well. Like,
well, for Majima, anyways.
He's going very well for Majima.
Yeah.
DA is contacted by someone higher up the chain who demands they send Chisato out to deal with this, stating that they keep her on a leash for exactly situations like these and that she's their only option. So, Kusunoki calls Chisato, but around the same time, Robita does, and Robita shows that Majima has Yoshimatsu as a hostage and forbids her from getting near Enkuboku. The bomb will go off in an hour, and he'll be watching her the whole time. And you can see the drones hovering outside the window. Very foreboding. Well, Chisato is not about to let Mr. Yoshi die, even though Mika is like, hang on, didn't you listen to what I said? She says, yes, I don't doubt what you told me, but I still want to hear it from Mr. Yoshi. I'm sure either way she wants to make sure he doesn't die.
Yeah, that's just kind of the person she is.
She cares too much.
She doesn't want to kill off any of the bad guys.
No, she wants to hit him with rubber bullets instead.
Mm-hmm. Which will potentially very, very wound them. Yeah, there's some kind of rubber bullets. I don't understand it either, because they turn to like
I thought that they were like pepper bullets, technically.
No.
It looks like they, it's either that or they're like ink bullets.
Yeah, they like explode on impact. It's weird. But yeah. They say they're rubber. They call her a chicken that only shoots rubber. A rubber chicken, if you will. They didn't say that part. Mika tells Chisato not to worry about Enkuboku. Fuki and Takina will take care of it because they are also excellent students of his. Is Takina really his student? I don't think he was at DA when Takina was.
No, but I think the implication is she's been here at Liko Riko for a while.
True. So the two of them clean out what's left of the armory. After all, they were about to close up shop. Before suiting up and heading out on what could be Chisato's final mission. Oh, boy!
Yeah, this is getting pretty crazy, and I can only imagine it's going to get nuttier.
For sure.
Yep.
I have been heavily resisting the temptation to watch after that last one in particular.
Oh, I totally understand.
Well, I could, but then it wouldn't be. I wouldn't be able to give my fresh takes as well. I'd have to hold back.
I'm more curious to see how the split's going to go between the Chisato going after Yoshimitsu and then the assault on Ikeboku.
Yeah,
especially since it's so many different angles coming into play at the last toward the finale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to say anything because I had to go spoil the ending for myself.
Yeah, I don't blame you, when you did.
You are in for three very thrilling episodes.
I'd expect nothing less at this point.
There were times when I was like, how are they going to up the ante from where we are right now? And they definitely delivered. They definitely delivered. Great, great stuff. It's all been leading up to this. So, look forward to watching it on Toonami in the coming weeks.
It's been really nice to have this on Toonami. This has definitely been a good show to throw on there. It's exactly the sort of thing we want. Something that you may have heard of, you may not have seen. I didn't. I knew about it, but I hadn't seen it. I would not be watching it if Toonami wasn't airing it.
I was going to say, it was under 2 years, which was nice. It still fits, and it's not just, like, straight shohen. It's actually got a blend of everything, which is also nice.
Yeah, it's but not... It's not like...
Wouldn't call it
martial arts shonen.
No.
Or adventure shonen.
Well, and for my perspective, before we had problems with Crunchymation... It's also not something I watched simuldubbed like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Precisely.
And then we're going to get Zom 100, which that's like under a year old, which is very surprising to me.
Yeah, that is one I've watched all of, but I can't complain. Zom 100 is just... chef's kiss good.
They're doing a lot of promos for that. I mean, they didn't start playing them until... Saturday, but there's like three different promos going around. Different lengths of size, of course. Which, hey, they'll probably do topicals too.
That'll be nice.
And they should. That is going to be a fine 90 minutes of television between Ninja Kamui, Zom 100, and Lico Rico.
Indeed. Fantastic shows all around.
And I mean, I'll certainly enjoy the first 2 hours because One Piece is right after that, but...
Good old One Piece.
Yeah. Good stuff. I actually watched Shippuden this past week. These episodes are done by the director of Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, and man, it has a very similar vibe. I was not... Like, I knew it was the same director, so I expected the visuals to be similar, but the tone... of this and the story is like really, really giving me those Beck vibes. So I it's pretty good. Also, Ino and Sakura were friends for like a minute before Ino was like, "Oh, you like Sasuke? Oh, we can't be friends." Girl, you got problems. It was nice to see Itachi doting on his little brother for a little bit. It was nice. It's considering all that occurs with Itachi afterwards, it's like,
yeah,
wow, kind of messed up. I'm not gonna say One Piece has been boring lately because there's some big reveals that just happened, and we will. Unfortunately, not get around to talking about those for probably a month due to various reasons. So, sorry to leave you hanging on that. But we will. We will talk about them.
A 2-hour One Piece episode is coming in the not too distant future, I'm sure.
2 hours? 2 hours? Yeah, I think it's just going to be 2 hours.
I'm optimistic.
A three-hour tour.
Yeah, you know, the worst part is I'll probably enjoy the all 3 hours with you, man.
I mean, is that the worst part?
Yeah, that's the worst part. The worst part is I won't even realize it'll been 3 hours until it's over. And I'm like, oh, we did that for 3 hours. What the?
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. What the fuck?
Exactly. That's what I mean by the worst part. The worst part is 3 hours will slip by and it won't feel like 3 hours. And we're like, oh, I talked about One Piece for 3 hours.
There goes 3 hours of your life again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain because I'll talk about One Piece all day with you. I'm happy to do that. I'll talk about One Piece when we're not even supposed to talk about One Piece.
Like right now.
Yes.
Yeah, we probably can't talk about Ninja Kamui that week, or we will be. That will only extend things to be easily more than 2.5 hours.
Yeah. No one really wants that.
Do we know how long Ninja Kamui is going to be?
It's 12 episodes. So we are halfway there, baby.
All right.
Well,
we got
slightly over halfway there.
I think we got, 2 to 3 more episodes of Liko left?
We have 3.
Okay. So I'm just curious as to what's going to replace that at this point.
Ooh, that is a good question.
That is the question of the hour, and who knows?
Well, Superman's supposed to come back sometime this spring, so it could be that, but I'm hesitant to think that they would have that and Ninja Kamui playing at the same time, because they probably want Superman in the first slot, even though it's probably going to premiere on Thursdays again, which really annoys me. Don't do that this time, Adult Swim. Come on, just don't do that.
They will. It's going to be that same thing they did last time. They premiere it on Thursday. They rerun it on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which is just, weird.
I don't think they did they rerun it on? Oh, yeah. Technically on Acme Night, back when that was still part of Cartoon Network as opposed to part of Adult Swim. It's weird that Acme Night's on Adult Swim now, which means that TMNT, the 2007 movie, aired on Adult Swim. That is the first Ninja Turtles thing besides Robot Chicken skits that has aired on Adult Swim. Which also, the 1993 Super Mario Brothers movie.
Woo!
Trust the fungus.
Yes.
Trust the
so
fungus.
So weird.
It is. Honestly, I'm surprised it's taken this many years for Adult Swim to regularly air movies. I know that's movies on the weekend is TNT and TBS's whole shtick besides sports, but
at this point the ratings have gotten to the level where they probably can have some level of justification for it, because you're looking at least for Toonami's sake, between a 0.07 and a 0.11 depending on the day.
Boy, it sure doesn't look like that Toriyama tribute really did anything to move the meter.
Oof. I could not find anything on it. It wasn't in the rerun section for spoilers, it wasn't in the It wouldn't be in the premieres, so
I made a note
that was just like, yeah, no, there are no ratings for this.
Not a single one of those episodes made the rerun chart, which is a very limited resource, I admit, but
yeah,
it's still the top 400 reruns on cable or something like that?
Roughly. I have to double check myself. I think it's either 250 or 400.
Honestly,
top 200 by spoiler.
The numbers don't matter.
Yeah.
they just do not matter.
We hit the floor a long time ago. So it's this thing's getting 250,000. That's actually pretty good, all things considered, at this point anymore.
Yeah.
As long as you're getting over a 0.1, maybe a 0.09 to a 0.11, that's going to be in the higher end outside of sports.
Ninja Kamui tends to be in the top 5 on Max and does really well on iTunes, Apple Video.
I would love to see that data. Mostly the streaming Max data to see what the views are for that.
I mean, it's encouraging, but I definitely recall other shows doing extremely well on Max and then it didn't save them.
Well, true. Yeah.
I just hope it does well enough not to get written off.
Yeah, no,
I
would
doubt
like
that
to
would get written off.
Oh, there's other things I didn't think they write off that they've written off, so.
Mm. Well, so far, House of Complex C is still there.
That's true, and I did like that one.
That was a good show. I did not care for the heavy dialogue ending, but it still works. Wish they'd done one more episode and made it a 5 episode.
I mean, I would have loved to have seen another episode out of that to spread it out, but I will say I thoroughly enjoyed it. I also thoroughly enjoyed that I called it. I will never let that go. I called it.
Well, have there been things in Licorice Recoil that you were correct in assuming?
Oh, gosh. With Licorico? I haven't made too many predictions. The biggest prediction I made was what I thought was going to be the obvious prediction, which was, oh, it turns out DA's evil. And that's the jury's still out on that one. Alan being evil is sort of no kidding.
Yeah.
It's this is shady.
I was gonna say like evil in this show is kind of like more of the morals thing.
When I say evil, let me clarify. Corrupt.
Yeah. Corrupt, yes. Like evil's like we don't classify Yoshi's views as evil. It's more like heavily emphasizing the idea that like, yeah, if you know, he wants to murder people in some level of like weird ass justifiability. It's like, okay, you're just an asshole.
Yeah, he wants to murder people and feel good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the vibe I'm getting from the Allen Institute as a whole is they don't care if it's good or evil. They just want the best of whatever it is. Reminds me of a certain character from Seven Time Loop, if anyone else is watching that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, it doesn't matter what they do, they just want the best of the best to be, like, whatever they want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we got 3 more episodes left, and...
Yeah.
That's going to be very enjoyable to see where this all ends up.
I will say I'm finding Majima to be the most interesting antagonist here.
Because he's the, like, neutral... I wouldn't call him pure neutral, but I don't want to call him neutral evil either. It's kind of a weird pick take, but he
chaotic
wants to be
neutral?
I a friend and I like probably to use the term leaning. I'd say that he's neutral, evil leaning, true neutral. Because this guy is definitely not. There's definitely a bit of evil on this guy to some extent. Because I mean,
but it is nice that his entire mentality is like, fuck, you know, the people who were trying to, you know, keep other people blinded by, you know, peace and reality. It's like, okay, yeah, I mean, I get what he's going for.
He's the wrong-touched extremist. Like, there's something to it, but this guy's willing to hurt innocent people for his goal. That's not good.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think if he actually... Well, he attempted to, but every
he hasn't succeeded, but he certainly attempted and had no problem with
it. Yeah.
I mean, he's intentionally killed Licorice. He has set up all these guns everywhere with the intention of getting Licorice killed and is totally okay if other people get killed in the process.
Right. I was thinking back to the train incident. I'm like, no, wait, Liko was in the train because they knew about it beforehand. So technically innocents weren't directly involved. That was where my thought process was.
Yeah, they weren't expecting Liko Rico to
to be there. So the intent was to kill
innocent people.
Innocent people, but they got it beforehand. It was like, yeah, technically, yeah, he was more than fine killing innocents at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. He is anything but innocent, but it's just something about him.
He's got a point.
And he does have a point. His methods could use some fine tuning, perhaps. I really like that moment at the start of episode 7 when Chisato and Majima are both thinking about the other and they're like, what are you?
That is what makes them very interesting as a pair. To see them kind of both not really get the other. And I'm going to use a term people will like to use, but evil does not understand good.
Yeah.
I don't think he understands where she's coming from at all.
Yeah. I would agree. He wants to.
He wants to. I do think he wants to. But
he just doesn't get it.
Because he's putting himself in there too much. Like, well, that's not what I would do. Well, that's not what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Yet he also considers them to be very alike in other ways. Cut from the same cloth.
One of those films, we're not all that different to you and I.
Exactly. Who knows what other movies they like?
Maybe they both like video games. Who knows?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe they both play Castlevania and they know that a man is a miserable little pile of secrets.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, just really great characters in this show.
Oh,
just, you got the fun comedy, you got the heartfelt moments. So, like, what are some of your favorite moments in these past episodes?
Definitely the day out between
I Sato love and the day out.
That is so just cute. so perfect. Also, I want to point out something that I've realized. We never found out who was the old man that they were protecting, who was controlling that thing.
Oh, no, Yoshi. That was Yoshi.
Was Yoshi. Okay, I'm
yeah,
dumb.
They explained it at the end of the episode. The guy was like
he was a cadaver. Or near...
yeah, no, I got that part. I got that part.
Yeah, but it was Yoshi was the one who was talking and doing all the movement.
Okay.
Because the whole point was that he hired the assassin to take the dead corpse out with the hope that Chisato would murder him in the process, and she didn't. And that's what sets up the whole Yoshi being pissed off that Chisato wouldn't kill, because her entire point was, I want to save people, because of the entirety of the misconstruction about him being a savior.
Yep. No, I get it now. I'm just... Wow, that blew over my head.
Well,
I was expecting a reveal of, oh, hey, here's who did it. It's part of this grand conspiracy. It was Yoshi. It was Yoshi all along.
I think the part where they reveal Yoshi is like less than like 10 seconds. It's basically like they do the explanation about the body being a cadaver, and then it cuts to Yoshi turning off the computer, and you don't even really see him. It's just you
I
see
saw
his suit and it's
yeah. I saw the silhouette, but I didn't put two and two together. That's who it was.
Yeah, that was him.
Okay, I bet. Dang it, I was hoping for another element to go into the finale, but okay, fair enough.
Yeah, really. At this point, it's basically taking down Majima and then getting the truth from Yoshi.
Yeah,
about like Chisato's like quote mission and shit like that, and like how the misconstruction even happened, apart from the obvious, you know, the heart subplot and whether or not that can get fixed.
Yeah, who knows how much time she even has left.
That's a good
question. I think
they
said, well, technically 2 months, but you're probably thinking with all the shit, she might have less than a week.
But that was a time ago in the timeline. So,
I'm
going to
be real with you. I don't think she's going to die. I think they're going to find a way around it.
I mean,
I wouldn't be put it past
her. I can't.
You
want to
spoil what you can't spoil, so don't spoil.
Yeah, no, don't. I understand. I mean, you're in a spot there, but I don't buy it. I buy that it's a real threat. I don't buy that they won't find a way around it.
I mean, that and the merchandising would just be destroyed if it wasn't already.
Speaking of the merchandising, I've been seeing
yes.
these dolls of Chisato and Takina. These little
and they got the boxers.
They got the boxers on Takina.
I'm legitimately very, very tempted, and I'm not normally someone that goes for that sort of doll, but, you know, for these two.
I mean, fair is fair, so it does make sense that Chisato has the removable panties, but come on now.
Yeah. I gotta save up for something.
Come
later
on now.
Well, Japan.
I gotta.
It didn't have to be
until...
removable.
I didn't have to.
I gotta wait until the Mother 3 stuff comes out if I'm gonna buy the Mother 3 plushies. Gotta wait for those.
I've got my
got the Mother 2.
Crazy
got the Mother 2 plushies.
But that's also expensive.
Imports.
Expensive.
Luckily, I don't think the imports for the Mother 3 are gonna be that expensive. I think
this conversation was brought to you by buy.com. I think they spell buy a special
bye.
Way. Yeah, isn't it like B-U-Y-E-E?
I think so.
Something like that, yeah.
I must admit, I've considered using it.
Or you can be me and just
but I never really have any... I don't really have anything that... Yeah. I never really have anything that I need or want very much to import.
Same.
But I'm thinking about getting a 3DS, a Japanese 3DS, because they're so much cheaper.
That is true.
Though to use buy effectively, you do have to buy several things at once, so I don't know if I'd ever... I don't know. That's a tangent.
We're definitely tangenting here.
Yeah.
But
so that, yeah, I really loved the date.
Yeah, no, that's,
it was precious.
I think that's the best scene in these last several episodes for sure. But there's other good moments. Takina just being like, I don't care about any of that. Just where are you? Where's your Mr. Yoshi? Oh, you call him that too. I mean, some good stuff.
Everybody wants Mr. Yoshi. Well, I'm not interested in you. Well, I'm not interested in you either.
No, you.
It's just like Kurumi just sitting in the closet on her computer. Just those moments where it's just, you know, a door opens and just, what are you doing in here? Stuff.
Nothing.
Then she gets dragged out. Okay, you checking have to work stomps. Too, you know. I don't want to work. Get to work. Fine.
She actually was working when they got busy with the poo-poo platter.
Yeah. That was just an amazing arc.
What are you smiling about? How old are you? That's classified. Maybe she is 30.
12-year-old software hackers are generally better than most programmers.
Yeah. Well, I must give Robota some props. He's certainly been able to pull off a lot in this.
Yeah. I mean, I've never doubted that he was skilled. He's just... He's the number two.
Yeah. He's the number two in more ways than one.
Yes. Maybe we should give him some treats from Lico Rico to show that.
Right. Yeah. I'll be real with you. It looks delicious. I'd eat it too.
I mean, I would have eaten it and then
I love chocolate.
Oh yeah, chocolate's some good shit.
I don't care.
I mean, you make it look like whatever. If it's delicious, who cares?
I can just smash it down and then it's not even poop shaped anymore.
Nope. Then you can just make a mountain out of it and make it a Play-Doh effect or something. Build your own look.
Mm-hmm. You like pick it up from the pancake and dump it over.
There you go.
You can do whatever. Definitely, honestly, I definitely would have preferred it over the other parfait, which has a bunch of stuff in it I don't particularly care for. But there's neither here nor there. And I really liked when they dressed up to get into the bar.
Oh, gosh, like, that was good.
What a hot little number you were wearing there, Chisato. And Takino wearing that dapper suit. Noriko Wasabi, Taro Kabayaki.
Ask no questions here.
Well, they are both dishes, aren't they?
Oh my.
Oh no. Also, when Chisato's like, come on, give me one. She's like, they're for children. I'm like, hey, Chisato is a children. She's only 17.
At my age, a lot of people are children still that you wouldn't normally catch children.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
Bro, Mizuki's a children too.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe not to Colt. But
back in my day, we played video games on Channel 3.
Don't remind me of that. I still have RF switches in my house that I probably still have to use.
I feel attacked.
I have a ton of RF switches still.
I was surprised they kept going until PS2.
Wonder what kind of video games Chisato played growing up.
That's a good question.
Lots of first-person shooters.
VR.
I can see her being into, like, Mario and stuff.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. Oh, man, she would be so good at Tetris.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty much any puzzle game. Actually, she'd be way too OP for most first-person shooters. Well, on the other hand, her body can move faster than she can make a character move, so... she'd probably get frustrated with the bad aiming of a lot of games. Who needs video games when you got real guns?
Hey, maybe she'll just play Dragon Quest.
Well, she is Japanese.
Yes.
And doesn't everybody in Japan play Dragon Quest?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
They gotta close down school when Dragon Quest games come out. Again, thank you, Toriyama Sensei.
Absolutely.
And to think it took them so many years before they actually used his art to promote Dragon Quest. Stupid!
Look at the best Dragon Warrior, you guys.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But
they did it with Chrono Trigger. And we all love Chrono Trigger.
Oh, yes. I get the feeling had they actually released 5 and 6, we might have gotten something like that.
Oh, probably. Didn't they start using him in the PlayStation era?
Yeah. Came out in the U.S. with as still Dragon Warrior, but they absolutely used the Toriyama art for that. I know because I have it, because I bought it from a Toys R Us when it was new.
Yeah, I remember that. 5 and 6 were passed over. Those were Super Famicom, yeah?
Yeah, at that time, Enix did not exist in the United States.
Oh, right.
They that would be a reason. Enix America, the poor Enix America employees like showed up to their work one day in like the early 90s and just nope, we're shut down. Bye.
I didn't know Enix America was actually in Seattle.
Yeah, they were really close to Nintendo because
that would explain why Nintendo and Enix worked together.
Yeah, Square US so was the same way then. Until the PlayStation era, anyway.
Hmm. So I don't know where Square's office was. I think it was in California.
If I recall correctly, they were like inside the Nintendo office, like a sub office.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
that's wild.
They were like right down the hall or something like that. I could be wrong, Nintendo historians. Please don't kill me. I'm just going off of memory.
That would have been really awkward around the time of Final Fantasy VII.
Well,
like,
around the time that's before that happened, that office got shut down, those employees were all fired, and a whole new Square US was made completely from scratch.
Oh, well.
So yes, it was very awkward, but for a very different reason.
For very, very different reasons. Oh. Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Last thing that Square team did was Secret of Evermore. Which they actually made themselves.
I did not know that.
Oh. Huh. Yeah. Right. Because US Square did make some RPGs for the US market.
Very, very few, but yes.
So Secret of Evermore was after Mario RPG?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Huh.
All right. Well, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Now you got me questioning myself. It was after, it was definitely after Chrono Trigger. Now I gotta look this up. There goes my video game memory.
Yeah, because I think Mario RPG was like 96.
It is, and I'm starting to think Evermore might have been 95.
Yeah, I think I remember that in Nintendo Power at the time. Because that's when I was subscribed to Nintendo Power.
It is 95, it's October 95, but yes. So it is before Mario RPG by, like, half a year.
Yeah. I think SMRPG was, like, June, July. So it was, like, 6 months before the N64.
Yeah.
And here, that was an unexpected bit of video game history, but, yeah.
Sorry, that's an era of video game history I know way too much about.
Except
for when I'm wrong.
Which certainly can happen.
It does.
It's been tangentially gone off the rails.
Yes, that also happens from time to time.
Yes. Well, the subway thing happened several episodes ago, so sorry we don't have a good transition there. But yeah. Look forward to more Licorice Recoil. And if you have any thoughts on Licorice Recoil, please do use the hashtag Toonami Talkback or email us at podcast@tsunamifaithful.com. We want to hear your thoughts on this wonderful program that we have been enjoying. I wonder if Kuro's come around on this show yet.
I would love to hear her thoughts on it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll check in with her sometime soon. So, you can follow us on Facebook.com/TsunamiFaithfulPodcast and on Twitter @TsunamiPodcast. You can listen to the podcast on just about everything, including Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Deezer, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Overcast, PodBay, PodBean, Podcast Addict, Radio.com, Spotify, and the TuneIn app. You can find every episode of the podcast to stream online at SoundCloud.com/TsunamiFaithfulPodcast and get the latest news by following @ToonamiNews on Twitter and read the news, views, and reviews on TsunamiFaithful.com. Colt, tell them where they can find you.
Or you can find me on Twitter at AmbientVirus, cannot talk, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/LifeVirus, currently replaying Lufia 2 Rise of the Sinestrals because I finished the Alice series on the hardest difficulty, or as I like to call it, the man mode run, and now I just figured, screw it, I'm going to go back and play some old RPGs I haven't played in years.
Excellent choice.
Nice. I've been playing Borderlands 1 lately.
I have been playing Arcade Paradise because I'm a dork.
I definitely don't like Borderlands 1 as much as 2, but it has its charm. And I've been playing it on my Switch, so I have Gyro Aim.
Nice.
It was really weird. The first time I was playing it, I was at my parents' house, and I had my Switch OLED hooked up to their huge television in their basement, and I had the hardest time aiming the guns. I was like, what is going on here? I think it's the refresh rate that's throwing me off. Because when I was playing on my Switch Lite the very next day, I was like, oh, I can aim fine. What's going on here? I was also trying to play Jet Force Gemini on that huge TV, which, as you can imagine, was blown up to hell.
Oof.
But, yeah, I was trying to shoot the guy that was shooting me from the trees up ahead, and I could not aim for shit. I am no Takina. I'm starting to get it with Borderlands. I'm still pretty bad, but I'm getting by. The game is kind of grueling when you're only playing yourself and you're not with, like, the multiplayer aspect is a big part of the appeal.
Absolutely. Playing on your own is not nearly as fun.
But when I play multiplayer, I get, like, caught up in trying to loot stuff, and I'm like, I can't focus.
Yeah.
The fights are easier, but then I have to take longer to, like, backtrack and get weapons, and I'm such a hoarder in that game. In any Borderlands game. But yeah. Laser, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at LaserKid Prime. You can find me over on Blue Sky at LaserKid. You can find my Tsunami Focus editorials right here on Tsunami Faithful.
Very good. And you can find me on Twitter at Sketch1984. I'll be on Blue Sky at Sketch1984. I mean, it's not actually at Sketch1984, but if you look up Sketch1984 on Blue Sky, yeah, you'll find me. I never post there.
Yeah, that's my problem on Blue Sky also. Every once in a blue moon, I'm like, hey, I forgot this was a thing. Hi.
Oh, yeah, I have a Blue Sky too, and I don't even say anything about it. I technically have a Hive account too, and I never say it because I never use it. I should just deactivate the Hive.
Deactivate the Hive. You're not protecting the Hive? You're not the beekeeper?
No.
Well, you gotta get out of that parents, Hive mind.
My parents watched The Beekeeper. I was like, wasn't that a delightful movie? Jason Statham, you can't go wrong. Watching him take down scammers and, well, mainly the security detail of people who rip elderly folks off of their pension and stuff.
Ah, scam baiting. Love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cathartic watching him do that.
Yeah, I have a couple of YouTubers I love to watch do that.
And it goes crazy.
Really? Oh, yeah. They get pissy real fast.
Oh, that's it. So do they, like, call scammers and mess with them?
That's exactly what they do. If you're curious, it's Kit Boga and Scammer Revolts. And not only do they mess with them, they will set up, like, a virtual machine and let the scammers connect. And then they'll backhack them and delete the scammers' files. It's glorious.
Wow.
But they also will sit there and waste their time. Kit Boga's more on the waste their time front. He'll get, like, a voice changer and be like, I'm a grandma, how are you?
Yeah, I found him through Film T. Pike when he jumped in as one of his GTA characters to mess with people.
Oh, fun.
Nice. So yeah, that's where you can find me, and where you won't be finding me is on any episodes of this podcast for the next month.
Yeah, I'm
taking a break, people.
Vacation time. Well earned, sir.
Vacation, all I ever wanted. It's more like a staycation. It's more like I have other things I need to attend to, so I'm just not going to be recording for a handful of weeks. We recorded two podcasts the other week so that we could do the Toriyama tribute and do a regular episode to cover Ninja Kamui and Dr. Stone, which we had been putting off Dr. Stone for a while already. So, yeah, after that, I was like, okay, guys, I'm going to record this Licorice Recoil episode, and then I'm taking a break.
Well, have fun. Indeed. Do things.
Yes, I intend to do things other than this.
Yay, other things.
So I hope you don't miss me too much. The others will pick up the slack. Can't promise how many episodes they're actually going to turn out, but probably at least two. And then in May, I have some big plans, some big things to talk about. I actually do have an off-topic podcast that is just in the can that I haven't released yet because of various reasons. So maybe that'll pop up.
Ooh.
But
I know which one that is.
That's like hit glass in case of emergency.
That's very much a hit glass in case of emergency at this point. It's a good one, though.
Yeah. Oh, and I just I saw both the Japanese audio version and the first ever dub of a Rascal Does Not Dream movie.
Ooh.
That those were this past weekend, and I supported it as best I could.
Give us some home releases.
That will eventually get released by Aniplex.
Yeah.
I think to this day, I might be wrong about this, but I don't think the series is available on Crunchyroll. It's available on Netflix sub only.
Yeah.
But I don't think that movie, the Does Not Dream of Dreaming Girl movie, I don't think that is streaming anywhere.
I don't believe unfortunate. It is
very unfortunate. It is available on home video through Aniplex, which means it's going to cost you.
Dang it, Aniplex. They get you with giving us a fun show on Toonami, and then they really get you with, oh, those prices.
Those prices are brutal. Though, I find their movie releases to be fairly swallowable.
Closer. They're like, okay, $50 for a movie instead of $30. All right, fine.
Well, I've seen some of their movies for 40 or less.
Oh, that's not bad. That's actually not terrible at all, actually.
No. I'm just kind of disgusted if I ever have to pay more than $25 for a movie of any kind.
Yeah.
But maybe I just don't value physical media enough, huh?
Well, that's why it's going away. We don't value it enough. It's our fault.
Yeah, that's what my shelves of physical media say about me.
Yeah, mine too.
That's a whole other time, right? But yeah, I was very happy to see that in both languages, and It's about dang time they dub something of it. I hope that this will inspire them to dub the rest.
Do it.
I really, really hope that's the case. Come on, Aniplex. You know you wanna. You know you wanna.
You we want just some spent of that like... dub money. Get some of that dub money, Aniplex. Let's do it.
We just spent like an hour and a half talking about one of your shows. Give it to us. Look, I've always been the proponent that a straight up slice of life show is probably never going to air on Toonami. But if Bunny Senpai Girl aired on Toonami, there are sci-fi and magical type elements to it. So it's not a straight slice of life, but I'll allow it.
Just out of sheer curiosity, give me slice of life on the
clock again, damn it.
I'd check that one out.
It's very good. It is. I was actually explaining this franchise to my father the other day because he was curious about the movie that I saw. I was like, okay, well, I gotta tell you about the things that led up to the movie. So, get buckle up. You get your own personal podcast right now. Yeah. He seemed to at least think that it sounded interesting. I don't think I could actually get him to watch it.
Yeah, I've been tempted to buy that audiobook for it, because at least that would be an English way to listen to it.
Well, that's a good idea. I think it is narrated by the same guy who voices the lead in the dub.
Ooh, that even more reason to do it.
I might be wrong about that. Yeah, no, I think I'm wrong about that. You know, sometimes audiobooks do a really good job of nabbing the people do these roles. And
I still can't believe they got Lee other Sorties times for Slayers.
Other times,
yeah,
kind of bummed when they don't get the dub voice for some of these characters. It's just not the same, man. Even if I overall like the other voice, though, I will say that in the Spider Isekai, the audiobook for that, I thought that the narrator for that did at least as good of a job. So, props to her. You'll love to hear it. Several tangents later, we still haven't officially ended this podcast, so we should do that.
Yeah.
And as one final joke regarding Licorice Recoil, okay, not the final joke, but one of the final jokes regarding Licorice Recoil, Mr. Yoshimatsu literally broke Chisato's heart.
Good night, everybody.
I don't think I can top that one. I'm going to let you have that. Shut up!